Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. You are back at the spot. Oh, here you are home. The place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Today, we have a winner, okay? We have Charles Maddox that is on the edge with us, and we're going to talk about some heavy-duty stuff. We're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in the world today, but we're also going to talk about the work that he is doing as an advocate. Charles is an award-winning actor, director, he's a producer, a television host, and a health advocate whose priority for health first and saving lives does not get in his way of excelling in all areas of business. And he's also the nephew of the late, great Bob Marley. Let's welcome him to the edge. How you doing, Charles?
I'm doing good. How are you, young lady?
Hey, I can't complain about nothing. I got to count every second joy.
True.
Yeah.
It's a blessing.
So where are you at in the world? Where are you quarantined at?
I'm in Florida right now.
What's the temperature there? What's the pulse of the people? Let me know.
Florida doesn't seem to have it as bad as some places. So, you know, I think people are still staying in, but, you know, they're getting on with whatever day they can get on with. And you know, it's just about staying safe right now, staying alive until they fix something here and we can get back to trying to live. But, you know, I think I'm making the best of it and being proactive and being creative. I'm reinventing myself. I'm doing a lot, you know, in this time.
Yeah, and it's a lot of self-reflection. And I think it's good. I don't care how much money you have. You can't buy your way out of this. I don't care how much power, influence. This is an invisible enemy, and it is striking hard. So tell my brains a little bit about you and all of the work that you've done in entertainment and as a director. And then we're going to springboard, and we're going to talk about the health advocacy work that you're doing as well.
Well, where do I start, April?
Oh, God, the color in the white spaces for us. Tell my guests some of the award-winning productions that you've been in and some of the television shows. I know I've seen you everywhere.
Well, yeah, I mean, I started, you know, making films. I started in music, actually, like you said, as the nephew of the late legendary Bob Marley. So I started in music and you know, I wanted to do something when I was young, didn't know what it was. So I kind of started in music and that kind of led into other things as far as me wanting to do TV. I think I wanted to be, I had just had my son and I wanted to be on Sesame Street. So I had a manager at the time and she said, can you come and meet an agent friend of mine? And next thing you know, I was out on auditions and didn't know what I was doing and started booking these roles. That led to me getting in some really great, you know, films and television shows and continuing on as far as entertainment. I knew I wanted to do something special, didn't know exactly what it was.
Right.
So, you know, it's led me on a nice little path. And then, of course, you know, from there to doing the whole celebrity chef thing that you brought up.
Well, you know what? And there's nothing more passionate and I think sexy than a man that can stir it up in the kitchen.
Yes.
You know, food is a meditation. It goes right into your soul.
You need to let me make some of my some curry goat for you. You know,
with a little bit
of champagne, some rice and a couple of candles, huh, April?
Yes, rice and peas. I know when I went to Jamaica, it was absolutely wonderful. Tell me a little bit about the music that you did. Did you play an instrument or did you write?
I was young. So, you know, back then, the only thing that, you know, I could really do was rap. You know what I mean? That was the hot thing. That was the thing to do. So it was really just, I didn't know anybody who played anything. I didn't know anybody who was in a band, so I just figured it would rap, and it was ironic. I had actually seen a video, and you know LL, who stars in
Luscious Lips. Yes.
So I went literally, and I had a car. I was working in a deli and saved money to buy a car, and literally just went. He didn't live too far from me, So I would go to his house. I just showed up at his grandmother's house, and I'm like, hey, is LL there, you know? And she would run me off and all that kind of stuff like that. But then eventually he ended up being there, and we became friends and did music with him. But so it was really one of those things where it was more necessity. I felt like, okay, you know what? I would have loved to sing. I would have loved to do so many other things, but the only thing I could do right then was rap. So, but that, like I said, that led to, you know, a lot of doors being open, working with a lot of great people, you know, really just defining the hustle, you know.
Exactly.
At the end of the day, you know, April, it's about the hustle, you know. So it all the brains.
It's still about the hustle now with folks everybody on the planet about to be unemployed. You know?
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying too as well, that you know, I'm using this time to, you know, I'm working on a new kids channel that is called Kids Fashion Space, and you know, my kids are going to be starring in it, and I think I'm going to jump in there and just make it one little fun ride too as well. And you know, I think that you have to be creative, not just sit around waiting on when you're going to go back to work. But redefining yourself. So in my career, I've really tried to redefine myself at times and step back and say, okay, now, you know, what's next?
That's what I do. I reinvent myself all the time, including my hair options.
There you go. I love it.
But, you know, looking at it, you know, if you look at it with a side eye, you and LL could almost be brothers or cousins.
Well, I think I'm better looking than him. You know, he's got that. I could take off my hat. He can't, that head of his. No, I'm not.
No, he's a sweet guy. So you have done some amazing things in your life. But now, you know, you share with me that you have diabetes. And yeah. You were diagnosed with diabetes. And every person in my family has diabetes except for me.
Yeah.
And if I don't lose about 20 pounds, you know, I'm going to be the next one checking my blood sugar every day.
Yeah.
What made you such a strong advocate to really create not only this documentary, but work with individuals, you know, to try to find a cure or to, you know, make us pay attention, more attention to our bodies, especially Black men. Black men, yeah. They, you know, it's a call out to you right now, because you hear the word diabetes and you think it's a little bit of sugar. You have no idea. No idea.
Yeah. Well, when I was diagnosed, you know, it was about 10 years ago, and I was using the bathroom a little bit too much over the weekend, and I thought it was just, you know, I made up all kinds of stories in my mind of what I thought it could be. So I, you know, figured I'd just go to the doctor. It was like on a weekend doctor, you know, a little clinic, and I figured I'd go over there, man, tell him something and walk out with some kind of, you know, medicine and go home, and that would be it. And, you know, he came back, said, do you have a family history of diabetes? And I was like, diabetes? You know, this was shocking to me. I had no clue. And I had no clue of diabetes at all. And nobody in my family really had it. I thought I was healthy. You know, I was guy in the gym, April. I'm working out all the time, man, but never doing cardio, you know, and really didn't focus on that. And was probably about 15, 20 pounds of more, you know, because muscle weighs more than fat. So it was one of the things where I said, you know what, number one, I literally went home. I was scared to death, thought I was going to die. Looked in the mirror and said, dude, number one, I got to lose a couple pounds. Number two, I got to change the way I'm exercising and do more cardio and really make it more about the heart and conditioning instead of the weights. And number three, total diet change, right? I remember I used to drink ginger ale thinking that it was healthier because it had ginger in it, you know, but then I look back and remember that, you know, stress is a contributing factor of diabetes. Also, lack of sleep is a contributing factor of diabetes. And, you know, I was staying up late, stressed out, working hard, you know, because I had a child at the time, man, I'm, you know, up at 1 o'clock in the morning, and you go inside that at 1 o'clock in the morning, you go and grab yourself a little snack. And what is it? Chips and some crackers,
right.
And some cookies and a sandwich. And, you know, so I look back at the diet and it was all wrong. So, but it has been a blessing because, you know, being diagnosed with diabetes has literally not only changed my life, but allowed me to be aware of my health and more focused on what I'm eating, what how I need to exercise, you know, what my numbers are, where my vitamin D levels are, where you know, my you know, my inflammation levels are, you know. So it has literally opened my eyes, changed my life, but also taken me around the world, April, and also allowed me to meet people around the world who I would have never met.
Right. Well, you know, this is a horror story. My brother-in-law had diabetes, and first it was his toe, then it was a finger, then it was another finger. Yeah. And his final curtain call is when the doctor came in and told him that they were going to have to amputate his penis.
Wow.
And he died.
I don't know how that came into play.
Yeah. Well, he was on dialysis, and you know, people on dialysis don't urinate. So the dialysis is what filters the blood, and it just shriveled up, and he died 2 days later. He said he was going out with some dignity. Wow. And I'm telling you, diabetes will rob you of your eyesight, your circulation, neuropathy. There's a whole lot of things, brain. So don't think it's just a little bit of sugar. You don't realize that rice that you're eating is turning into carbohydrates. All those potatoes you're eating are turning into carbohydrates. So you had an aha moment, you had an awakening, and you developed a cookbook. Now, I went searching for you on the internet, and you did an interview, and you made a vinaigrette dressing, and you put it over the green beans. Well, I just came from the grocery store, and I bought all the ingredients, okay? So I am going to make that because it just seems so delicious. If people learn to extract the salt and the sugar from their diet and really more herbs and spices and, you know, fresh things in the garden, I think that that's better. Do you think that meat, you know, and I'm not saying that about meat because I eat meat too, but do you think that that's also a contributor to people having poor health habits, the amount of meat that they may consume?
Well, you know, even with me, you know, I've noticed when I try, you know, doing certain, you know, diets, if that's what you want to call it, or eating a certain way, I've noticed that eating meat seems to tend to keep me bloated a bit.
Does, and it seems like it takes forever to digest because I've been paying attention to that now.
Exactly, you know. So I think a balance is needed, and I think that especially in America, you know, we tend to overeat. You know, if we go back to even where we got the whole three meals a day, or now people talk about eating 10 meals a day or right. 6 meals a day. You know, that came from basically when the settlers came in here and they saw that the Native Americans didn't have a set regimen. So they kind of set that regimen, because you got to remember something, in many cultures, eating once a day can be a task, right? Sometimes people in other parts of the world, I was just watching something the other day on YouTube, and this was, you know, shot recently, and I forget what part of the world it was in, but, you know, they had to literally, I think actually it was in Brazil, and in some of the rural areas, where if they don't go catch their food, they may not eat that day. So not every day was we're eating three squares or even one square meal a day.
Right.
So I think that, you know, we tend to, you know, overeat. We want to eat a nice breakfast. We want to eat a nice lunch. We want to eat a nice dinner. And I think that, you know, if we kind of pull back on, I do a lot of intermittent fasting. Actually, right now, I think I'm going on about 16. Let me see. I'm going on 16 hours, if you can see from there.
Really? I can do 12. But, and then, you know, when I want to manifest something, or if my life is in chaos or I want to connect with the source, I try to do 3 days. But
yeah. Exactly. Right. So intermittent fasting is so powerful. You know, it helps with blood sugar control. It helps with blood pressure control. You know, it just cleans the body. You can take in some good, you know, teas and some waters and really just once again, like you said, focus and discipline. Right. One thing I've seen with a lot of people, especially with type 2 diabetes, is discipline. Every time you, if we're in a group setting and we're talking, even with pharmaceutical companies in a group setting, it's lack of discipline, lack of self-control over what we're taking in. It seems like food is such a common denominator that, you know, literally what we eat, will kill us. And it's killing us, bottom line.
I know when I was in China, my driver, he ordered all of us a Coca-Cola. And I said, oh, I don't, you know, I opt not to. And the lady looked at me and she says, ah, you're the first American that I've ever met that doesn't like the sweet poison.
Huh. Interesting. Interesting.
And so now when I look at sugar, I'm thinking this is sweet poison.
It is.
So we have to really watch that. You know, and another great thing that you said, you know, about consumption and portion sizes. Me and my daughter went out. We ordered one meal. You know, they charged us to split the plate. But we were both full.
Yeah.
Overeat. Yeah. And I look at my African friends, when I go to their house, we eat family style. There's one big, great portion. And I find that I'm full, but I don't eat as much because we are eating together. So it's so important to, you know, really take into consideration and eat a well-balanced meal, all kinds of vegetables. I look at my plate now and I'm looking for color. My mother lost her sense of taste. And because she lost her sense of taste, she just overeats. She overeats because she's trying to fill a void. And so now I make her plate very colorful. You know, I put a smiley face on the pancake, but I make sure there's some red, some green, some blue. And all of that are antioxidants that help us fight off. Tell us a little bit about your cookbook. How did you devise this cookbook? Making a cookbook is not easy.
Yeah. Well, obviously, you know, because I was doing the whole, you know, the celebrity chef thing, I really wanted to make my space in diabetes. I had a cookbook before that, but since I was doing that, I had came up with this idea of cooking healthy for $7 that could feed, you know, two or more people or almost a family on $7. So it was just a natural progression. So I've had cookbooks, I've had sauces, I've had spice lines. The diabetes cookbook came from, of course, wanting to share some of, you know, my tips and what I've learned over, you know, the time span that of working in diabetes and in, you know, and cooking and healthy cooking, healthy eating, to just be able to get something to people that they could utilize that allowed the average person to still be able to cook healthy, but still taste good. You know, I think a lot of times people look at, you know, eating healthy and they think, oh man, we're going to have to, you know, get rid of this, or it's going to taste like cardboard, or it's going to be dull and bland. And that's not necessarily the case. You can spice up some of the best foods that you have. I don't care if you're from Haiti or from Africa, those same foods can be eaten, just prepared just a little bit differently and portion controlled. So, you know, that's one of the reasons why I made the cookbooks.
And something else that you did wonderful outside of, you know, doing the cookbook, well, inside the cookbook, you gave us ingredients that we can pronounce and stuff we can go to the store and find.
Well, yeah, because, you know, sometimes you look at these cookbooks and it's like literally doing Chinese arithmetic. It's like, what is that? You know, where am I going to find, you know, that ingredient? You know, so I wanted to make something that, you know, literally people could easily put together themselves.
So tell us about the documentary. Now, you did the first documentary on diabetes, and now you are following individuals that are living with and living through cancer. Tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing there.
Yeah, this particular show was based on, you know, because my father died from cancer, and it was literally just April. It was just out of nowhere. I had gone to see him in New York, and literally he was perfectly fine. We hung out. We had a great time. And then literally, I would say about a month later, April, I got the call that he was in the hospital and went to New York and within literally probably about 3 weeks, he was gone and didn't know he had cancer. Was in you know, great health, great shape. And literally just passed away. So I was inspired by that because of how it happened. You know, because sometimes you get a chance to, you know, people who have cancer, they're able to go through treatment, they're able to do certain things, right. You're able to work with them and stuff like that. You know, all of that didn't happen. It was one day he was here, next day he was literally gone. Oh. So I had a, you know, because of my first season that I did on called Reverse, that was based on diabetes. The formula that I had created was a formula that could be replicated. And it just, you know, I thought, wow, wouldn't it be a great idea to do cancer, you know, kind of, you know, in remembrance of my dad and others who had dealt with this. And I reached out to a great company called Hope for Cancer, based out of Mexico, and that does, you know, treatment for cancer. And they said, hey, we'd love to do this with you. And, you know, and next thing you know, we were, you know, in Cancun and preparing to shoot a show, and they brought on, you know, some of their great, you know, patients that, you know, had gone through the treatment, and some patients who were getting ready to go through the treatments for the first time. And it was truly a gift. You know, I believe that, you know, the thing with the series is that, you know, it's really taking a look into the lives of people who are dealing with things, because, you know, a lot of us are dealing with things, April, whether it's mental health issues, whether it's, you know, cancer, you know, lupus, sickle cell. And we don't get a chance to understand what it's like seeing somebody go through something, you know, just like, you know, yesterday I was looking and I said, okay, the cases of people who passed away from this condition, coronavirus, it was like 60, 70 people, in a day. And I thought, you know, it's easy to say 70 people passed away.
Right.
But if we lined up 70 people in our house or our apartment, it would be shaking. You know, so when we think of, you know, these numbers and we just think that, you know, we don't understand what somebody's going through and the pain somebody's is going through. When we think of, you know, the millions who pass away from diabetes complications,
right. Absolutely.
And you know, and it just becomes a number to us. It's not even, you know, it doesn't even have the same effect right. that it used to. So I think when I created this, it was really to kind of share their stories and go into their homes and understand what their partners and their loved ones and their children were dealing with and kind of share their stories.
Right. And, you know, the treatment that they go through, you know, I have a family member that's about to go on dialysis, and mama says my mother's 90. She says she ain't doing it. She done had her come to Jesus meeting. She said at 90, she said, baby, it's about care. It ain't about cure. But then you look at the people there that are, you know, that there's still hope. And there's a whole lot of options, and there's so many other things to do. So we're going to talk about how to get in contact with you and view the documentary and support you. But before we do that, let's lighten the mood. I got some random questions for you, Charles. All right. So three things that you just absolutely cannot live without.
My children. My hope in God, and the ones who keep me going by their support in the work that I'm doing, because at times it's a dark road, you know, and being an advocate for people is not easy. And if you don't have those who, you know, really say, hey, man, we're proud of you and thanks for fighting. Thanks for doing what you do. It can get real tense at times, you know, so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Appreciation is key.
Yeah. So those are three things.
All right. So what would you tell a younger version of yourself?
Oh man, you know what? Probably, I wish I would have kept doing school. You know, and I say that because not that you need something to fall back on per se, but it's always nice to, you know, I could have been a doctor three times over if I wanted to be, or a lawyer three times over. It's good just to have something in the back pocket. To fall back on, so that, you know, if you ever just want to say, hey, you know what, man, I want to, you know, take a different course, take a different road, you have something to do, because, you know, this is whether you're an actor, a ball player, or
podcaster,
exactly, talk show host, podcast, it can become a hard road, and not everybody is successful at this. You know, there's more people who are trying who never make it than there are a few people who you see and say, man, they've had success, you know. And we know that it sometimes it takes, you know, 20 years to be an overnight success.
Absolutely. And,
you know, there's only a few Tyler Perrys. There's only a few Oprah Winfreys. There's only a few, and you know, only one. So, you know, always having something to fall back on, realizing also your real talents and skills and ability. You know, never sell yourself.
But what all those individuals are like you and I, they're creatives.
Yeah, yeah.
And without an idea and a thought, everything else is minuscule.
True, true.
You know? So we need that. So that's a great thing to tell yourself. You know?
Yeah.
what is your favorite color and why?
Gold. And I say that, I think because I'm a, well, I'm not that I'm into astrology or anything, but I'm a Leo.
Yes, when's your birthday? I'm a Leo too.
July 27th.
August 17th. We gotta have a sidebar. We're so misunderstood. We really are. We really are. And we have very high expectations.
True, true, true. So I think, yeah, so gold is something that is attributed with being a Leo, so I like that color gold, you know.
All right, last question. If you had a superpower, what would it be?
That's a good one, April. That's a good one. I want to say To live forever.
Now, I'm going to tell you what my mama said. She was very sick. You know, she just had pneumonia. Right before this outbreak started, she had pneumonia.
Gotcha.
I'd peek in the room, and I'd be real nervous. And I'd say, Mama, you okay? Yeah. And she said, yeah. She said, but baby, don't worry. She said, wouldn't it be awful if I was the only one left here?
Mm.
If I lived forever?
Mm.
So that kind of put it in perspective. You know, and I was like, I don't know if all this forever stuff is all that good.
Well,
but you know what? but I get it. But you know, we don't want to be alone.
Yeah, if I wasn't the only one here, it would be a good thing. But I mean, I think with living forever, it's because you could always try to correct the mistakes and do better, right?
Yeah.
But stay, of course, I want to stay, you know, young and fresh. I don't want to be
okay. You don't want to age, right?
Yeah, I don't want to age and be like, he's 900 years old. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you look fabulous because you're draped in gold. And the work that you do, let me let you know that it is not a thankless job, okay?
No.
Okay, to whom much is given, much is required. And if you can carry the load, baby, I want you to carry it.
Yeah,
you're wonderful. I love what you do. You're a great father. You're a great actor and performer. And you're a selfless man.
I'm trying.
And that speaks volumes to your character, Leo, man. Because I know we like to be out there. We are hard chargers. We have huge expectations for ourselves as well as the world around us. But we are leaders. And so I just am so glad that you were here to share your story, your testimony, your truth, and your work with my brains. We love it.
And what's up, brains? What's up? I'm not done talking, though. You rushing me off?
Hey, we got nothing but time, okay? We can talk. So what else you want to talk about? I want to talk about the people that's in the documentary. I want to talk about your upcoming things that you're gonna do, and definitely how to get in contact with you.
I'm not gonna. I know the brains is. I don't want to take too much of their time, man. It's short and sweet at times. But definitely, you know, I think that you know, I do want to talk about for a second. Once again, go back to the first season that we had, which was Reverse. It aired on Discovery Networks, which was about five people living with diabetes. That was tremendous, life changing. We saw people who, you know, were on the show. Probably lost over 300-400 pounds total. Some people came off of insulin by their doctors, you know, suggestions.
Wow.
So we did really good work with that. And then of course, April 5th is when the WGN show 8 Days will air, the first ever docuseries based on cancer. You know, five people living with cancer and the work that we did with that. You know, we've got Carrie on the show, who, you know, dealing with you know, her form of cancer. We've got Kate from Australia. We've got lovely Nicole, who I helped bring on, who had to fight to be on. We had to fight to get her on the show. We had Janine. We have Jose and his wife. We had, of course, Dr. Tony and his wife, who head up the whole thing. Dr. Daniela. It was Oscar, the chef. It was really a blessing. Dr. Asa. It was really a blessing to bring all these people together and create something that hopefully will be able to change lives, save lives at the end of the day, and inspire people.
And you know what, also that we didn't touch on this, because I know we're talking mostly about type 2 diabetes, but type 1 diabetes, a dear friend of mine's son, just was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. So now he is going to he is going to have to live with that because his pancreas is now affected. You know, what words of encouragement would you tell people that get the diagnosis of diabetes? It's not a death sentence.
No, it's not at all. I mean, it's something that should allow someone to, whether it's type 1 or type 2, to really be in tune with their health, with their bodies. You know, type 1 is a very different condition from type 2. And, you know, I feel for some of those people because, you know, man, what they have to deal with the highs and the lows is just very challenging at times. I hear the stories, I see the faces. You know, with type 2, they call it a lifestyle condition. Because basically, if you change your lifestyle, if you eat right, if you do what you have to do, you can control this condition. Where we fall into, so a lot of times people ask me, which one is worse? You know, and, you know, sometimes I'll say type 2. Why? Because, you know, people think sometimes type 1 is. It, once again, it's very different, you know, conditions. But type 2 is something that, because, you know, it's based on our lifestyle, our conditioning, our discipline. Mm-hmm. Like you said, you'll see your brother who will just deteriorate. And whereas, you know, most with type 1 diabetes, they're able to, you know, take their medication. They're really on top of things. They really, you know, manage their disease the best that they can. Whereas, you know, we somebody with type 2 diabetes, man, they could have a blood sugar 250. And I see them eating, you know, cake and soda and chips and crackers and just, you literally see them destroying themselves. So I think that slow death at times is worse than anything. It's not a death sentence at all.
It's not a death sentence, and people can manage it, and we can get through that. I'm seeing it, you know, just kind of, you know, taking really men. I'm calling you out again, men. Well, take your medication, check your blood sugar, and do not be afraid. You know, you have people that care about you, your family, care about yourself, and go and get this all taken care of.
And so, the thing with diabetes is, like you said, and I just wanted to reiterate that, is, you know, 80% of diabetics die from heart disease. It's the leading cause of blindness. It's the leading cause of amputation. It's the leading cause of kidney disease. It can be a killer, but it can be fought, and it's something that it should be addressed immediately and worked upon. Go find the right people. Go do the research and make a change.
And I'm seeing here that is one of the population of people that are really susceptible to this coronavirus, is that yep. with underlying conditions that have autoimmune disease or have diabetes. So, brains, please pay attention. Please pay attention. We ain't doing this for shit and giggles, okay? This is really important. And we care about you and we love you. And, you know, folks is out here sharing their own personal intimate story. He could be making a movie. But no, he's making a documentary to try to help, you know, carry our other brothers and sisters through. Charles, you have just been wonderful. Do you have that cookbook there with you?
I don't have it right here with me. I don't
okay,
have it.
Okay, well, right, I'm going to get a picture of it. Are they selling it on Amazon? What happened to you? You froze up on me. You there, Charles? Hit that button. You froze?